Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, welcome to the 340th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Michael Groves and David Fairman. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we are talking about more gripes, my specialty.
Kaplan gripes, coming at ya.
We're talking about that side of the film business. It's very much an art, a craft, and a business, where we compete with each other, where we lose jobs, or when we get jobs and other people lose jobs, when we're up against each other. It's a roller coaster of emotions, this business, and sometimes it's fun to hear that other people are bummed about not getting a job too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Or even just that those negative feelings, those competitive feelings that we have sometimes, those feelings of, well, why not me? Everybody has those feelings as well. So we've got our good pal, Carlin Hudson, here to talk to us about that. Regular listeners will recognize her from many, many episodes and her myriad of successes. But she's a great counterpoint, I think, Oren and I, you and I are, we were real yin and yang on this one. I think pretty regularly we kind of switch sides depending on which way the wind is blowing, so.
Yeah, I mean, I love to commiserate with people.
It's hard to be pitching on things and, you know, knowing there's a bunch of other people in the mix. Someone might get it, I might get it, you might get it.
If you like hearing me complain about things, you will really like this episode. And if you like Matt trying to find the silver lining, then you will also like this episode.
I dare say if you like the show,
then won't like this episode.
It's pretty consistent with the way that we've been hosting it for the last few years.
Speaking of liking this show, if you really, really like this show and you want to support us financially so that we can pay our editor, pay all our server fees.
Maybe even afford therapy, as we allude to in this episode.
Well, I don't know that we would use Just Shoot It money for therapy. Is that what you've been doing with the Patreon money?
Yeah. That's why I find the silver lining so I feel much more evolved now, thanks to all of your patronage.
Now things are adding up. You're like, I make money. I don't know about you, Warren. Whether I'm working or not, it's Patreon.
just easy money.
Anyway, we really appreciate a dollar, $5, $20 if you go to our Patreon one time. I will mail you a Just Shoot It podcast hat. Just mailed two hats out the other day and made some people very happy.
Patreon has also changed the way that they do billing now. So I think it's a little bit more streamlined and straightforward for people. Like, I think it used to be that there was like a delay. You would sign up and then at the first of the month you would get billed, which is weird.
Yeah.
Now you get billed as soon as you sign up, the same way when you buy something online somewhere else, basically.
Check it out, patreon.com/justshootitpod. It's where you can go tell us that this is worthwhile.
And we're going to bring live shows back. Oren, we haven't talked about this. I sent some emails out. We're like putting feelers out. Like it's going to happen eventually. Being a patron gets you free access to the live shows.
Well, without further ado,
a word from our sponsors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, we're here with our BFF, Carlin Hudson.
Welcome back, Carlin.
Thank you so much. It's really an honor to be here on the Jealousy episode as the special guest, the expert on jealousy, me.
Obviously, you're our favorite guest. Everyone knows that. We were going to talk about jealousy, and to me, like, social media is like a big part of it, and just like what attitudes us as creatives and filmmakers and writers and directors and artists, so to speak, like how much we have to be happy for our friends or our colleagues in their success, and how much we're allowed to be kind of bummed about them getting the job that you wanted to get.
It's perfect also because I feel like we all have been up against each other, especially like a few years ago. I think it was relatively common that we were all on the same list regularly. Oren, you were saying off mic, I'm fond of saying it's easy to be happy for each other when there's lots of work going around. And I think it gets a little bit more challenging when people are in dry spells. That, you know, directing is kind of a feast or famine sort of situation. And there's the saying, work begets work. So when you're not working, you're not begetting anything. And I think that that does make it harder for sure.
And I mean, I guess there's also like the other thing where you see your friends that you were directing kind of at the same level at one time now are directing huge TV shows or big multi-million dollar movies. It is hard to like not look at your own career and say like, what did they do that I didn't do? It's like there's a lot of ups and downs. And, you know, I used to be an engineer and I talked to people about this one. They ask me about like switching from engineering to directing. They're like, oh, that's a total 180. And I think they're talking about like the work. But to me, the biggest difference between being an engineer and being a filmmaker is the like the roller coaster of emotions that you go through, you know.
Stability.
The highs are like so high.
Yeah.
You're getting awards with celebrities and, you know, getting drinks and flying in private jets and doing all the crazy things. But the lows are so low. You just like you get rejected for the 10th time in a row and you don't know if like there's like anything left of your career.
Yeah.
Whereas like a job like an engineer, you know, you sure you have some big wins and some small losses, but in general, you can rely on going to work and doing what you do and always having a job no matter what.
Yeah. And I think I talk a lot about this in therapy. First recommendation is get a therapist if you can afford it. But
Carlin, clearly Oren and I aren't in therapy because we have a podcast.
This is our,
Okay, men, it's clearly not the same.
It's no, not but the same. You're right. I, truly, the only important piece of advice is just go get therapy.
For real.
That's it.
Because, you know, we do talk about it a lot, but this career, because I'm sure listeners kind of know that it's been a slow summer for, I would venture to say, most people. Like most directors I know who aren't super, super established are having a tough time right now.
And even some production companies, I think, as a also, you know.
Yeah, and I Oren knows this well, but I had a terrible work summer. I lost two movies and my two movies got canceled, and then I lost 5 or 6 commercials in a row. That's never happened to me. And man, it is hard not to just beat yourself up. Like, what am I doing wrong? But yeah, what's tough about directing in particular is my therapist was like, wow, so you're telling me that like you go from being the most important person on the set to just sitting in your office
alone,
waiting for the phone to ring, basically. Yeah, yes. And that is crazy making.
Yeah, I love that point about being the most important person on the set, because it's not just because that you're calling
Matt
the
keeps
shots.
Telling everyone that.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone, I am the most important. No, that status brings like some real psychic weight to it. I used to think, oh, I'm always so funny on set. My jokes are the same, but my status, whether it's like a mix of psychology from the crew or like a little bit of butt kissing or some cocktail or whatever, mm-hmm. but like people treat you differently, and that affects your own self-image in a very tangible way that you have to be aware of, or you will get caught up in it and become a lunatic. Like it's not surprising that like Michael Bay and James Cameron act abhorrently sometimes. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, if you made the biggest movies in the world and you're making them for months and months and years, and people are treating you like that nonstop, you just would get used to it. Do you know what I mean? That's just like injecting heroin into your eyeball all day, every day. Anyway, Carla, I cut you off to agree with you.
As other listeners probably know, like I also am fortunate enough to have a writing career, but writing is not the same, because writing, you're always alone staring into your computer. Well, if you're writing features, if you're in a writer's room, you're with people, but it's just a different kind of marathon than directing, which is truly up and down. And so now that my Netflix writing job has wrapped, because they all got fired at Netflix. I don't know if people know that, you know, everybody got fired. Netflix fired hundreds or thousands of people, including the whole department that was producing.
Yeah, like 10% of their employees or something.
Yeah. And so I didn't realize how much that like grounded me, because I kind of like had that project for a year and a half that I could just go back to whenever directing was not totally, I wasn't booking a lot of directing jobs. I like always had this sort of base level of a writing job. And man, I didn't know how good I had it, you know?
I relate, and I didn't even think about it until this moment. But like I, for a long time, half of my income was just writing different things. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of, you know, you start focusing on one thing, and then all of a sudden that part of your life is gone, or maybe you lose a little bit of heat. You know, I think that's the other thing. Like selling things gets trickier.
It's funny how much things have changed just in the last, you know, 6 months to a year, because I feel like, I don't know if it was the beginning of this year, at some point, a very lucrative job came up and I turned it down. And I said on the podcast how proud of myself I was for turning down a job, because it didn't really fit into my plan, career plan, you know, in terms of like what I want to make. Carlin actually ended up doing that job and got all the money.
And thank God.
And pretend, you know, you might have gotten the job anyway, even if I wouldn't have turned it down.
I didn't have to like pitch on it. But,
And I saw your treatment, which was amazing and literally changed the way I make treatments.
Wow. That is really so nice. Thank you. Continue. Keep complimenting me, but continue. Tell me what else you love about me. Go on. Yes.
But then like 5 months later, a similar job came up that was paid much less. The creative was much worse. And all of a sudden, I'm like, huh, I should probably take this job. The other kind of interesting thing you brought up was about your movies versus your commercials, you know. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think the big difference is you write a film, you sell it to Netflix. That's still an accomplishment on its own. If nothing else happens with the movie, there's still something there. And you can still, on your resume, is like, hey, I sold this feature to, you know, this original script I wrote to Netflix.
And your reps can say that there's a little gas in the tank with that.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. I got to join the WGA. It wasn't actually an original script. I adapted a book. Whatever. Oh. It doesn't matter.
It wasn't Caitlin Versus?
That's a different script. That was the one that was set up at Hulu that got canceled.
Oh, so you had a project at Hulu, a project at Netflix. Anytime anyone at a party is like, what are you up to? It's like, oh, I'm shooting this thing in Philadelphia. I'm doing this. I got this going on, and I have these two movies that are my movies set up, you know, at Netflix and at Hulu.
Yeah, formerly. See how hard I made it being on myself? Anyways, continue.
But when the Netflix movie falls through, it's not because they're like, oh, we like someone else better. It's because, hey, we're cutting back on our spending. We're letting go of some people, and it's kind of just bad luck. But when you lose five commercial jobs in a row, or however, three, whatever it is, That's because you lost them to someone else. You know, the commercials.
Yeah. I want to push back a little bit on that because I think that the psychology of it, because it could be commercials, it could be bad luck, quote unquote. The director could have worked with that the company a million times, or like
they just made. I was the recommend for two of those five or six commercials, which means I should have gotten them, but in some fluke I didn't, which is has never happened to me.
I would call that bad luck for sure. And I think the flip side of that, and Carlin, I'm not saying this at all, but I could imagine if I were in your circumstance and my movie got canceled, they're still making other movies, which is the equivalent of them picking some movies and not yours. Do you know what I mean?
Right, but they're making less movies.
I guess what I'm saying, you can talk yourself into being upset about it and not be able to get out of bed no matter what, whether it's luck or whether it's like literally like, oh, we just don't like your movie anymore. Like they're new bosses and they fire you. And you can talk yourself into any of those scenarios.
Yeah.
I'm saying we all have very good reasons to be depressed.
Yes. No, I think that's a super valid. That's a very I think it's more depressing than losing a commercial. I think it's very valid to be bummed about that. What I'm saying is it's different from like a, like seeing someone else get your job, you know, like the competition of it all and kind of the jealousy. I don't know if jealousy is the right word, but it's this thing where when there's not a lot of work, it does become a little bit of a competition to see who gets the job.
The movies are definitely, personally, I was able to understand that those two things are totally out of my control. I wrote the best movies that I could. I had major stars attached to one of them and it still didn't matter. Someone new at Hulu, this is what we think, decided that it just wasn't a movie that he wanted to make.
Yeah.
And so that was it, you know. And then Netflix, again, we all know what happened. Netflix, they probably mismanaged. They spent too much money on stuff. Then they fired a bunch of like mid-level executives, which has been a bananas move, but whatever. Horrible for those people. But those felt like particularly out of my control. And some of the commercials felt out of my control, but some of them I feel like I could have strategized better on some of my approaches. And in that way, that's been a good learning experience because I'm like, I even saw the treatment of one person who won a lottery job over me. And I thought my treatment was perfect. And so did the producer. She was like, how could this is the best treatment I've seen all year. And I saw the winning treatment and I was like, yeah, that rocks. That's a great treatment.
Yeah.
He did this couple things really well, you know?
I think there is solace when you see the competition and they nailed it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, it's not personal. It's not bad luck. I would have picked that too. Does in a certain sense make you feel better?
Yeah. Or at least it's actionable, right? Because then you're like, oh, that feels like some. I think the like crazy making part, like I talked about, is when just everything's out of your control and you just can't do anything. And you just feel like when I feel out of control, that's when I feel, you know, I just you go nuts. And so when it's something in a treatment that I could have done better, that to me is like, oh, next time I'll try that. Then again, I could have maybe not gotten the job. She may have known the creators. Who knows? Sure. You know,
Carlin, the real reason that I was like, oh, Carlin would be a perfect person to talk to about this topic is because years ago, Orin and I were complaining about something. We were complaining, frankly, a little bit about like how some producers and some higher ups like to be like, we're not looking for white males right now. Mm-hmm. And you said something I would be introspective too if someone said that to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, that's the perfect way to frame the feelings. Because it's not like intellectually, in that circumstance, like, you know, it's frustrating, but also what can you do? But that's true for everything.
You can't change your demographic.
Yeah, you can't change any of that stuff, but also you're still feeling those feelings.
Yeah.
And so it's not invalid to feel frustrated that you are the victim of bad luck or any other thing, right? But that's different than blaming or comparing, you know, like kind of the negative sides of what we're talking about here, right? Because it's one thing to look at yourself to think, how can I improve my work? How can I make things better? What could I do? How can I be more opportunistic? How can I self-generate? All of that stuff. That's the result of being introspective, you know, that's a healthier way to deal with it, I think, than like, I can't believe that, you know, Carly keeps getting these movies, right? It's like, okay, well, maybe you should write some movies. you know.
Yeah. Right?
Like, is the flip side. Do you know what I mean? And so I've thought about you saying I would be introspective to many, many times over this year.
I don't even remember saying that.
Yeah, wow, it was just something you said earlier.
I'm pretty sure I'm the one that said that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like a lot of what I try to provide with the podcast for new filmmakers, obviously experienced people know this, is that I do think a lot of people starting out in Hollywood, they finish film school, they move to LA, they make a short, it gets into some festivals, they get some meetings, they pitch some things and nothing happens and they get like really angry, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I had this thing and I did this, like I did all this stuff.
I did the stuff you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what I enjoy is like when we talk to like Maggie Kiley, you know, who's like a super successful TV director, but like it took her, she had to make a lot of movies and go do a lot of programs and like work nonstop, like get rejected a ton. And I want people to know that that is like part of the process is to like get rejected and think that like you're getting kind of screwed over. But, but then when we had, you know, we did that whole month of like network development execs and they're like, yeah, we love this pitch from, you know, Kanye, but just wasn't right for us. And then you realize like who you're up against and what they're looking for. And they're looking for, you know, just that whole undeniable word that people were throwing around a lot a few months ago.
Yeah.
And you realize like, oh, it's like you, Carlin. You're like, I made it's perfect treatment. And then you see someone else's treatment. And you're like, oh, dang, that's pretty good too.
Yeah.
And it's tough, but like, I guess part of what I think people get from the podcast is realizing that it's not personal and that there's always like more that you can do. But I think us, the people that make the podcast, sometimes I definitely fall into that thing too, where I'm like looking at another director and I'm like, their stuff isn't that good. Like, why did they get the job over me?
Yeah.
But oftentimes, more often, I probably do the opposite, which I'm like, why did I even write a treatment or pitch on this job? Because like, I look at someone else's reel. Like, I just lost this job. I was actually with Carlin when I got the call. And I looked at the reel of the person that got it. And it's like putting a Marvel movie director against someone that had like an indie film at Newport Beach Film Festival, you know? It just felt like
good festival.
Yeah, exactly. It just felt like I was perfect for the job, but then you see the person that got it and it's like, oh, they've done like the Super Bowl version of this job.
Yeah. And I was having lunch with not Oren, sorry to cheat on you, Oren, another friend of mine who, we went to NYU together, Farm Cup in Echo Park.
Anyways, trying new places, huh?
That's right. And he is like, for all intents and purposes, like a pretty successful, you know, television writer. He's been writing on Grown-ish or Black-ish and sold a couple things, whatever. And, you know, he's just like all of us, terrified about what the next job is and how, but then we realized, like, remember 5 years ago, all we wanted, our goal was to.
Yeah,
or not even that, but just like we were both kind of like, if we could just make a living to where we're comfortable writing or directing or whatever, like, wouldn't that be amazing? And so you just realize, like, as ambitious people, which we all are, if you're drawn to this crazy competitive industry, like, success is, I'm sure everybody's heard this, but is like a mountain or a ladder that just keeps going up in front of you. Like, you get to the next ring, but then you don't even look below because there's six more ahead. And then when you get to those, there's six more rings ahead of that, right? And so that's how we get caught in this like loop of we're never good enough, we're never doing enough, we're never whatever. But like the better analogy for success in our industry is like a map. It's flat and then there's hills and then there's a valley and then it's just kind of winding and that doesn't just go straight up. Like, that's just not helpful for us because it's just not accurate, you know, and just being aware of that, I think, is helpful to me.
Well, and I think that's a perfect segue to my other main piece of advice, which is just celebrating the wins, right? Mm-hmm. No matter how small they are, because, you know, and that could be like a positive email or like, you know, somebody responding to something simple or winning even a smaller job or you know, or even honestly, I think it's truly a win to get turned down. To lose out on a job is still a win in so much as that means you're in the mix. You know what I mean? right? Like, yeah, there are, I'm sure there are listeners.
One or two times, that's fine. By the way, yeah, when that happens four or five times, it's because you are working for free a lot,
yeah,
very hard, and you're investing emotionally.
Sure. Yes. I hear you, Oren. Some dry spells, Oren, where you were like, oh, God, I keep losing out on jobs, and I wasn't seeing boards. Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying the grass is always greener, for sure.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, a dark, hard time for me, for sure. You know what I mean? And that's not me pointing fingers, obviously, but I'm saying, like, I hear your point. You got to make a living. But, like, if you don't enjoy this work and maybe sometimes set your mind on enjoying it, consciously deciding to enjoy it, it'll eat you up because it's too hard and there are too many better ways to make money, frankly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You got to celebrate those wins for sure.
In what way do you celebrate the wins, Matt?
That's a good question. And I guess my main philosophy behind it is to just actually acknowledge them. Mm-hmm. To say, hey, this is a win. Appreciate it for a moment. Do you know what I mean? Because my wife, like, I got a nice email yesterday. And I forwarded it to my wife. And she was like, you look upset. And I was like, no, I'm just in it right now. I'm just thinking about it. I'm just trying to think of, like, can I use this in some way or whatever? But, like, it honestly, like, that's why I've been thinking about it so much recently. It's just like, oh, this is a nice thing. Just savor it for a second.
I think that's a nice thought for sure. But, like, let's say you're a football player in the NFL. Okay,
you made it to the NFL. Please continue. Uh-huh. We get it. We can relate.
Yeah.
That is a football. It's like a kind of egg-shaped ball that people throw. Made out of pigskin? Anyway, and you are in the, you know, you finally made it on this team and they let you play and you had a horrible play and then you lost the game. And then the next game, you lost the game. And then the next game, you lost the game. And then the next game, they don't even put you in the game. Like, are you still celebrating that you're in a player in the NFL? Or are you like,
what I'm saying, crap, Warren,
I'm not going to be in the NFL next week.
I think that you could look at literally millions of people who dreamt of playing in the NFL and like ask them, hey, would you prefer to lose a few games in the NFL or never made it? And like the answer is very clear, I think, from all of those parties. Right. And it is actually a pretty apt comparison because we are playing in the NFL. Right. Like Hollywood is as competitive as pro sports, certainly. Right. And so you're not wrong. You got to make a living, Oren. I hear what you're saying.
No, but it's not just the living. It's the whole like, yes, of course, if you are a kid in high school and you're playing football, your dream is to just like be acknowledged by a football player, you know. But once you're in the NFL, your job is to excel and to win games and to get better. And if you don't, then you will play less and eventually you will not be a professional football player. So
yeah,
there's
I guess what I'm saying, I think we're both right, but what I'm saying is that you're not going to win more games by dwelling on the fact that you've lost a bunch of games.
Yeah.
I'm not saying give up trying to win.
You might
use sports psychology. Yes. They say the best athletes are the ones who can let go of their mistakes. Because you have to, right? If you can't let go of your mistakes, then how could you? I mean, I play tennis like recreationally, and it's just like, man, when you double fault or like miss two serves in a row, it's just you. Yeah, not pickle. Look, I have a lot to say about pickleball. We'll save that. But it's like my coach is always like, let it go, let it go, let it go. And we have to do that too, right? Because like you're gonna have to serve again, so may as well get practice at just letting go
different.
Of the mistakes.
If you were at Wimbledon, you know, if you're Serena Williams and this is potentially your last opportunity to like it,
but she
it's
lost.
Harder to let.
She lost in the third round at Wimbledon,
yeah,
but it's
no
okay.
longer the greatest player ever.
Okay, that's not true.
That's not true.
No,
literally
I'm
the greatest to have ever
okay,
lived. Right?
I'm literally sending you my therapist info right now.
No, obviously I'm kidding about Serena Williams, but no, I'm just saying like, and look, if you win the small job, yes, you celebrate. If you like, someone, you know, we have like one of our former guests, Tony Franklin, like he was on this podcast. A bunch of people contacted him and he's kind of mentoring like all these different directors. He has like Zooms on Fridays. And it, like, I think a lot about like why he does that, you know, like what he gets out of it. It's not like he gets paid or he gets jobs or sure he meets people, but there's something about like, hey, I'm a director and I'm going to like help other like newer directors. That's part of being a director. And so like, mm-hmm. I feel like that can be a win, you know, just people like looking at you in a way that validates like you and your career and all that stuff. But I think just being in the mix is nice. But at a certain point, if you're in the mix and you're always like the person that they put through in the mix because, you know, they mm-hmm. needed like three people to bid on this job, then it's like, it's hard to celebrate. There's other things to celebrate.
Or, you know? And I can't blame you for feeling introspective. Your feelings are valid.
They are valid.
They are. I'm not joking. They're valid for sure. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that like the difference between being competitive and being jealous, that's really what we're talking about, is like, what are you dwelling on? Right. Anytime I've been in that circumstance where I've just been like, I can't believe it. I can't believe that. Like, why am I not booking this? I wasn't even in the mix on that. Right. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of circumstances. There's lots of jobs I wasn't even on the list for that I would kill to get. Right.
Yeah.
The answer is always just like, do the work and enjoy doing the work. That's the answer.
I agree that it's not valuable to be like to dwell, but mm-hmm. I guess I just think at a certain point you don't need to celebrate being in the mix. You know, you kind of need to kind of figure out how to win the mix.
I hear what you were saying. I think we are both right. I think that you should celebrate being in the mix. And that's not to say don't go soft. Stay competitive. But also, like, you could do it for the love of the game also.
I will say just another, like, tool I use when I'm feeling particularly jealous of other people's careers, because it does require, like, a bit of a great deal of self-awareness. But, man, I will notice myself, like, seeing them. For instance, I did this with the director of Do Revenge recently, who people told me to watch that movie because it is kind of in the vein of things that I would direct. So mm-hmm. instead of like enjoying the movie, I just am super jealous of this woman who I've never met. And I go on like a rabbit hole online about like, who is she? Oh my God, she's only that old and she did what and blah, blah, blah. And then I can feel myself like that pit growing in my stomach of like the voice in my head that says, you're never going to be like her. You're never going to make it, you know? And you're like, wait a second, hold on. I'm feeling this. And then I was like, I need to turn the internet off. And then I'll take off Instagram on my phone mm-hmm. for weeks mm-hmm. at a time. Because when I get into when I feel myself just like clicking on this and clicking on this and going on this and looking at this, I'm like, oh, this makes me feel bad about myself. That's not helpful.
Yeah. That's why I'm not on social media basically anymore.
Yeah. Because when work is slow and you're on social media, whatever your thing is, like if it's you're comparing other people's relationships to your own or, you know, work stuff, it's all fake. You know, people will come to me and like, why are you doing so well? And I'm like, I've literally lost 8 jobs in 3 months. You know what I mean? And so, but online, I seem so happy because I'm not posting all my failures.
I think it's also true of all three of us and probably most directors we know. You could wrap the coolest shoot of your life mm-hmm. and then 2 days later be like, I'm never going to work again.
Yes. I just had a job in Philadelphia for Crunch Gyms, you know, mm-hmm. one of the best jobs I've had in years. It was so much fun. The agency rocked. It was just, and I stayed in this like dope hotel, ordering room service in my fluffy white robe. And I was like, I am an amazing director.
I've been killing it. Yeah.
And I was so happy. I literally almost cried in this Philadelphia tour, this cheesy, this super corny tour I took with the Liberty Bell. He made me cry because I was just so grateful to have had a great job. And then I get home and I'm like, wow, that was great. That was great. Truly, 3 days later, it felt years away. I was like, I just was happy. What happened? You know?
Yeah.
And that's what we signed up for.
I guess I don't really feel like I'm jealous of people because there's no one that I see that succeeds that like I don't understand why, you know, mm-hmm. and I know how we could get better jobs and we could win better, you know.
I see plenty of people's careers. I'm like, how?
I see people that I feel like they made just the right thing at the right time and mm-hmm. knew the right people. Like, mm-hmm. and that's basically what you need, especially on the TV and film side. Mm-hmm. Commercial side, it's just so different because there is a system and you are funneled into like lists and people sort through them and filter out reels and then do treatments. And
all of that stuff happens in TV and film. All like literally there. I made those lists.
Yeah. It's just a different structure in terms of, like, it's not as simple as three people submit treatments. Sure, it's different in that way.
Yeah, but you still, they like, oh, we need a director for this. They meet with a handful of people and then they pick that person.
Yeah.
And those people present presentation materials. They put together lookbooks and things like that.
Right. You're talking about for an episode of TV or for a pilot?
Well, for features. Pilot. Yeah, a pilot. Features. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess if the episode is going, but they still meet with those people.
Yeah.
Right, right. Of course they meet. But it's that, like, if your friend became a showrunner of a show, you know, and you had directed things in the vein of that, and your friend, like, there are, we do know a lot of directors that got jobs that way. Because they were friends with the people that were making the show, you know, like Peter Atencio and, you know, all, like, a bunch of those UCB people and, Jarrett, you know, like, there's a lot of people that through what they've made and their connections are getting things that is, and that happens in the commercial world too, but not really in the commercial world that we're playing in.
Right.
But yeah, I guess the funny thing is that I do feel like I know what the solution to every one of these issues is.
Just shoot it.
Yeah. And Jordan, you know, our buddy Jordan Brady had, I forget who it was, but he had a guest on his podcast like years ago that I remember, I think he might've been like a director DP, but he talked about how he would do like a few great jobs and then things would get really slow and he'd get really depressed and he'd like make a short and then that would just open up a whole new like list of people. And then he'd work a little, you know, do a few jobs. And again, it's just like, it's endless cycle of working for other people and then like kind of refinding your voice. And because the trends change too, it helps when you get to like, you know, you, Carlin, we talked about this a lot. She's made a bunch of different shorts, you know, over the years and played some great festivals. And I think like if we talked about how, if you made a short today, it would be more, have a purpose beyond the short, right? Is it a proof of concept or is it to show people that you can work with surfers or whatever, you know, like that if whenever you're not working, you should make your own work and vice versa. But
yeah,
it's like the longer we do this and the more kind of comfortable we get in like fielding calls and offers for work, the harder it is to like pump the brakes and say like, okay, I'm just going to sit here at this coffee shop and write something.
Well, and there's inertia to it too. If you're feeling bad and you're not working, it's hard to sit down and be like, okay, and now I'm going to write the great American short screenplay.
Yeah.
And every time your phone beeps, it's like, ooh, who's that? Oh, the IRS. Okay.
Yeah, I was a bill collector. Very cool.
So we just lost Matt. He had to run to a meeting. Freaking bastard. So busy. He's working so much. And we're just sitting here making a podcast in the middle of the day. Do people, the biggest place where I realize when I'm not working as much, again, because I think, you know, we're all, anyone that's a filmmaker is like a workaholic. We're all just used to like working nonstop every day. When people are ask you like, oh, what are you working on? What are you up to? You know? And I feel like when you have a ton of work, you're like, oh, I'm working on this thing and it's cool. And I'll tell you more about it if you're interested. But when you don't have as many things, it's like, yeah, I'm pitching on this thing and I'm waiting to hear back on this. And like, I might have this thing and I'm kind of like working on my own thing. You know, you just turn into like a nervous ball of anxiety. Does that happen to you?
It does. I think I tend to downplay like my accomplishments and lean into my failures, which is natural, but also part of it is like, I think it's me trying to be like, see, we're all struggling. Like, it's okay. You know, everybody loses. I lose all the time. But yeah, I wonder if it's a detriment to kind of getting future jobs. I don't know. Like, do we just have to pretend to like everything's going great? Or are we honest? And those are the only two options. There's nothing in between.
Yeah. Well, no, I think about that a lot because obviously we've had people come on the podcast before. They've made like some movie that played at a cool festival and we're like, what's next? And they're like, oh, we don't know. I don't know. Like, will you hire me? Will someone hire me? And I'm like, that's like the number one way to not get hired. It's like, it's just a turnoff when someone seems like desperate to get the job. So I think about that a lot.
True in dating too, right? Like, I know we've been with our partners a long time, but yeah, it's like you can't go on a first date being like, you love me, right? We're going to get married. This is everything's perfect. You're like, no, that's an immediate turnoff. Like, this person is unhinged.
Right. Yeah. And then I also like read this thing. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read like
a book,
How to Win Friends and Influence People and like all those kind of like.
I'm not above self-help books, but I have not read that one.
Yeah. Like there is this. Obviously, there's like the secret. There's also every different version of this, but basically, people like happy people, you know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes I like have to remind myself that when someone's like, "How are you doing?" Me saying like, "Ugh, life sucks," like does not make someone want to talk to you and be excited for you and work with you as much as like, "I'm doing great," you know?
Yeah.
Lots of cool things happening. So.
I'm trying to think of this time period as a opportunity. Wow, I sound so annoying. Because when I think back about like my short, nice ass that kind of launched my career in some ways, my comedy career, I made that because nobody was hiring me and because I just decided to make 3 short sketches or films in a year. And that was the third. And, I never would have made that if I didn't have time to creatively think about the concept, to just do it one weekend, to just shoot it. Mm-hmm. And similarly, now I'm reaching out to people I haven't heard from in a long time. I'm working on a series. I'm just doing a bunch of stuff that I usually don't have time to do. And I don't know when these things are going to pay off, but I know that they will eventually. It's like currently I'm deep in the long game. You know, but short, yeah. But the short term is rough. There's just no way around it. But it is, yeah. I know that this time period is going to be good for me, but that doesn't make it easy.
I think once we get past our hangups, me maybe having the biggest hangups of the three of us.
It's not a hangup competition.
Well, I know there's going to be a ton more work. And it is an opportunity for us to work on our own things. And yeah, it is good to remind ourselves that, you know, happy people are attractive. So we should be happy.
What a non-problematic moral to this episode. Perfect.
Well, I'd love to hear from our listeners if you guys have any thoughts on work, competition, jealousy, like what you do when you're not getting jobs, what you do when you are getting jobs. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on everything. You can tweet at us at justshootitpod or email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. Before we end the episode, do you have a second to endorse something with me?
I do.
Unpaid endorsements.
I'm endorsing a little film called Bros. I know, controversial on gay Twitter, let me tell you, but I saw it in the theater on opening weekend and it was a blast. It was such a great comedy. It was really, really fucking funny. And we had a great time with a group of people and it was just really so much fun to see a comedy in a theater. And I thought the love story was great and really heartwarming and sweet. It just was really well directed, in my opinion. Like the tone was great. There's some hilarious set pieces and scenes, and it's just a lot better than I think the marketing is. And I loved it. So that's my recommendation. Go see it.
Yeah, I think the marketing is trying to be controversial, but maybe it's coming off as like cheeky, I don't know, kind of like basic.
Yeah, it's I think it's trying to appeal so hard to like straight people that it's turning off maybe its core audience. That's sort of like the thesis of gay Twitter. And I don't disagree, but I love Billy Eichner, and I know that not everybody does, but I love Billy on the Street, and I just think the movie's great. So
I think I love him too. I've heard him like on many podcasts talking about the movie, and
yeah,
and it sounds really good. Yeah, the director is Nick Stoller, who's not gay.
Not gay.
And he, I think, brought the idea to Billy, and then they wrote it together.
Really?
Yeah. Huh.
And the other lead who nobody's really ever heard of, right. He was awesome.
Like from like Hallmark films or something, right?
He was incredible. He was so sweet and funny and hot. Great movie.
So I saw this video from Corridor Digital, who we endorse their things a lot. They always make awesome things on YouTube. And they made a video called, Is This the Death of VFX? It's a video where they trained an AI to figure out what they look like the, all the members of the, of digital, of Corridor Digital. And then they like made a whole story with art that's all AI generated about this like medieval story that stars them. It's just incredible. Like you, and the way you would do it is you would take like a few selfies, you'd load them into this AI engine called Stable Diffusion, I think. And then you would say like Carlin as a warrior, you know, in medieval times, like slaying a bear, you know, in kind of stylized as like, or like in oil painting, as if Monet painted it or something. And then it would show you that exact image and it would be incredible. Like it just looks so good. And one of the interesting things about the video is like, when you do AI art, like one of the things that's super helpful is to reference an artist's style to tell the engine like what you want it to look like. And they mentioned two artists. One is named Yoji Shinkawa and another one, Greg Rutkowski. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't familiar with either one of them, but I guess Greg Rutkowski does a ton of like video game companies hire him to like figure out the look of like the worlds and things like that.
Wow.
I thought those were two really good references when I'm looking up art for like treatments and things. And I've always like wanted to like be familiar with more like pop artists and their names, because, you know, as part of our job is to find imagery and visuals and be inspired and to try to find cohesive things. So if I find a photographer I love, I'll like bookmark their page, you know, and I'll try to like check back in and see what new photos they have. But through this video called Is This the Death of VFX from a Corridor Crew on YouTube, I learned about these two new artists. And so really love the video, but also I just like learning about artists. So then when I'm pitching something that's like an epic story of some sort about, you know, Kit Kats in the office or whatever it ends up being, I can like reference these artists. That's something cool from this week. Thanks for joining, Carlin. Are you still Carlin? At Carlin Hudson?
That's on Instagram.
On Instagram.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And at Hey Carlin, CARLYN on Twitter.
I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. I'm at Smitey Pyleg on Twitter. Matt is at Mr. Matt Enlow across all social media. And our podcast is at Just Shoot a Pod. And we'd love for you to follow us, write to us, mention us, do anything, interact with us. We love it when we hear from people.
Remember what we said about being desperate?
Yes, please. We love you. Love us back. No, don't, you know, I don't care.
Or no, we're cool. Actually, us. We're like really happy with ourselves. So
yeah, we have a limit of like a million followers. So we prefer you don't follow us if you're not really serious about it. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. And the music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we will catch you next time. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.